The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 265 for Wednesday, March the 16th, 2011, the day before the MotoGP season starts at Qatar. My name's Martin Darlington, recently married, very happily back on the show and happily married. And with me again is Jim Race across in California. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well. Did she insist you say that a second time?
Absolutely not. No, I've cracked my cheek muscles. I just haven't stopped smiling for about 10 days. It's brilliant.
I think us and plenty of the listeners out there were perhaps not equally as joyed for you, but certainly seeing some of the pictures and knowing that you two have been waiting for this for some time, it's a fantastic thing. And of course, I pass my congratulations on to you and Sharon and Mia, of course, and you've got your little happy family there.
Absolutely. And we went on honeymoon, which we decided to call it because we took Mia with us because we couldn't go to Center Parks, this sort of adventurous holiday place without her. And we had a manic but absolutely brilliant week. Very lucky with the weather. It was cold but mainly dry. And we did horse riding and archery and lots and lots and lots of swimming and lots of fresh air and lots of sleeping. But it was brilliant.
Awesome. And I suppose you had a pint or two while you were there.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah, just to, you know, wash away the dust of the day. And if anyone hasn't seen on Facebook, our table plan for the wedding dinner was every table was a MotoGP circuit, either present or former, because we did have to put Donington Park in there, with the exception of one, which was the Lorenzo Land table, at which we sat our very good friend Pete Jones, who introduced us many years ago, and he's the world's biggest Rossi fan.
How'd that go over?
He spent a lot of time laughing and looking at the top table threateningly.
did you find that his gift was mysteriously disappeared before the end of the evening?
No, he was fantastic about it, actually, and I think he appreciated the humour, although, again, if anyone looks at the picture on Facebook, they'll see his response, which is, I have photographs from various Catalonia trips.
And I suspect that there's probably way more photographs of the reception and whatnot to come. Well, Martin, it's fantastic to have you back, and very, very much welcome back to Motopod. Welcome back very much, Martin. It's great to have you back. We do have a pretty good show this week. Clearly, we're getting into the meat of the season. We had, you know, the beginning of the real race season started with World Superbike at Phillip Island. That was fantastic racing. Just this last weekend, we had a domestic race here in the United States with the AMA, the Daytona 200. We'll talk about that as well. In addition, and I want to preface it a bit, I was very excited, and I've been looking forward to doing this for several weeks once I knew the opportunity was going to arise. I had a talk with Dennis Noyes. Those of you out there will know him. The name will ring a bell. Unfortunately, there were some technical difficulties. I did not get the entire thing, but I would be remiss if I did not play what I had, and I definitely want to make sure that I have him back on the show. He's a fascinating personality as well as one of those people that knows the ins and outs, as well as the father of Kenny Noyes, who we've had on the show a whole bunch of times. So you guys will get to hear that. Martin, we had some very interesting listener emails, about not only emails and stuff, as well as on the Facebook page, talking about what circuits might replace our missing one. And now, obviously, we have another missing one, or at least a put off one. You had one that cracked me up, and I think I'd have to agree with you, although I don't think it's quite FIM spec yet.
No, I just, wanted to shout loudly from the back, Cadwell Park, Cadwell Park. Or can you imagine seeing the MotoGP bikes going over the mountain?
I think they'd land on the front straight, wouldn't they?
I'm not sure they'd still be within the circuit boundary when they landed. No, I mean, that was a nonsense idea, but wouldn't it be funny?
It would be fun. There's several circuits on the BSB tour that would be interesting to see full spec, you know, bikes on it. You know, clearly the BSB, so some of the BSB bikes are within a hair's breadth of World Superbike, but to see full-on GP bikes out there would be crazy. You know, and here's a little weird bit of serendipity with that that we didn't have in our show notes, but I certainly should mention. John Hopkins was at Qatar for a photo op, although it turned out to be a whole bunch of laps on the track on the Rizla Suzuki, managed by Paul Denning, who also runs the, I want to say Crescent Suzuki, but I don't, they're, whoops.
Yeah, still Crescent Suzuki.
In BSB, on the Robin's Egg Blue bike with a number 21 on it and zipping around for the Qatar test. And he had an ear-to-ear grin. We know that he's going to be doing probably at least one wild card ride on that bike this year, or potentially being a replacement for a not yet stricken. Yeah, I still find that weird, don't you, of Aero Batista?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do we know that he's going to get the wild card? Because Paul Denning, last I heard from Paul Denning, not that I speak to him personally, but you know, in an interview, was there's no firm plans. He was very careful in his language. He said there's no confirmed plans for Hopper to do any wild cards. We'll have a look at that as the season progresses. You suspect, because I think somebody pointed out that at least one of the American rounds is during a gap in BSB, so he'd certainly be able to.
I would bet you anything he will ride at a round in MotoGP, and probably not maybe as well a USA round, but he'll be elsewhere. And, you know, look at it this way. If he says yes now, he loses the PR advantage that he might have in building up to it and letting the press kind of guess and guess. And I hate to be so cold and calculating about it, but it's the truth. And I think it was pre-told and then kind of pulled back a little bit. So as far as I'm concerned, it's going to happen, and it will happen in the Europe or in the Europe or the UK, one of those continents. So I think it's a done deal, but I am getting away from myself and getting ahead of myself. We did kind of hit a milestone today, which I think is cool because it's one of the very biggest ones that's involved with this, Martin, the MCN Fantasy League. We're doing pretty good.
Yep, MotoPod Listener League hit 200 teams yesterday, and it was Mike Bean and his team Frijoles or something, that I think he recalled it. They were our 200th team, so congratulations, Mike. Thanks for joining in. And if there's anybody out there who fancies joining in and hasn't yet, you've only missed one round. So if you haven't registered yet, go to www.motorcyclenews.com/FRR for Fantasy Road Race. And you need to register. It's totally free. Enter a team, two MotoGP riders, two World Superbike riders, and two BSB riders within a nominal budget. They all have a nominal value placed. And once you've done that, you follow the enter a new league link, and join an existing league is the next link you need. And our PIN number is 1477. So you enter that and you'll automatically be taken to the MotoPod Listener League. And as soon as I notice somebody has applied to join, I will let you in.
Cool. And no matter how many join from here on in, at least for the next 3 or 4 days, I'm still massively tied at 143rd. although we do have people in our league that are actually tied for the overall league lead in the amongst all of the teams that are participating in this, and I think there's probably a good 50,000 people involved. So it'll be fun seeing what happens if you are, I believe, located in the UK or in the Europe. I'm gonna stick on that one for a bit.
In Europe,
you have the opportunity to win some fantastic prize. Not quite as, I think it's, what is it, the YZR 125 or something like that?
Yeah, first year they did it was an R1, then it was an R6, and now it's a 125.
Next year it's going to be, a signed glove from Yeah. From you. All right. So why don't you start zipping through this? Because this just reminded me of a couple of other things that are going on. So I'm going to add some stuff to the show notes whilst you actually do this. Oh, and by the way, real quickly, give me the team name of the last person that joined up and got us 200 again.
Frijoles. Frijoles. I have no idea. It's something Spanish.
It is frijoles. Frijoles. They're beans.
Don't you come down here, you old book learn words.
Well, you know, I did just talk to Dennis Noyes, and he's multilingual. And I am located in California, which is conveniently more than half Hispanic. So. And I do like Mexican food. All right. Enough digressing. Fire when ready. Go on to our main topics, and I'll jump in where needed.
Well, I mean, the first thing, and we do have to say, enough's been said everywhere about the Japanese earthquake. Horrendous images. Watching it on television, it just doesn't look... It looks like a Hollywood disaster movie. Bizarre. I mean, I don't think there's anything we could say that hasn't already been said. But obviously, Japan is a massive player in the sport that we follow. So it has a greater effect than just the human tragedy of it. And as a result, the Japanese GP has been postponed to the 2nd of October. There is some track and grandstand damage, but they think it's only a few weeks away from being sorted out. But an interview with Shuhei Nakamoto also brought to light the fact that HRC, and it's not so much the factory, it wasn't damage at the factory, which I originally thought, having reread the interview. The problem they've got is the infrastructure. The trains, an awful lot of train tracks are down, so lots of people are going by road, and so the roads are absolutely jammed. And bear in mind, Japan has a population density, I believe it's greater than the UK, and we're pretty dense here.
Absolutely.
And you can read that any way you like. But they HRC at the moment have sufficient spares for Qatar and Jerez. And he said basically if the transport system in Japan doesn't improve, they'll have to very carefully manage that situation after Jerez. So there might be more. I mean, obviously, in terms of the human cost, it's trivial to worry about getting, you know, a spare clutch lever. But, you know, it may have an effect further down to various of the teams. I mean, the HRC have made a statement. We don't know it yet what Suzuki and Yamaha, what their position is.
I do know as well that I believe I read in the trade papers today that Yamaha is also going to be shuttering some of their plants. And on top of that, you're right. What else can we say? Frankly, it's a horrific tragedy, and unfortunately, it's still unfolding. As you and I record this on Tuesday this week. And I greatly wish, and you know, the Japanese are such a resilient people, and I respect them so much for the way that they stoically maintain as positive an attitude as they can in the face of such adversity. But
yeah.
It's clear that their economy is going to be hurt by this. The question is how quickly can they bring it back? And regardless of how much this actually does affect the sport that we love, I just want to see them come back and be as strong as they are, because they're a huge force, not only in this sport, but, you know, a big part of the economic vitality of the planet as a whole.
Absolutely. And, I mean, always out of these things, you'll get some... There'll always be, you know, so many examples of heroism or of you know, just absolute determination not to let this stop someone. And I don't know if you saw the film of the guy who was paddling a roof. He was stood on a house roof 10 miles out to sea, and he was picked up. And they picked him up, and his expression was just like, "Ah, all right, cheers."
Yeah. Yes.
Like, well, you know, what do you want me to do? All I had was a roof. If I could have found a boat, I'd have been in one, but all I found was a roof. So don't look so surprised.
So, yeah. Amazing stuff, and something that's certainly going to, be affecting, you know, obviously we've got a whole lot of Japanese folks that are traveling with the circus currently in Qatar and have been for the testing. And it's got to be difficult to deal with that and work with that. Clearly a massive part of the paddock. And like you say, at HRC, as an example, has, you know, three full factory, two semi factories, and one satellite bike out there. So when you think of spare parts, and it does become a bit of a logistical nightmare as to how to pull these together, especially considering that those bikes are not all of the same spec, and even the bikes within the classification of say a factory spec bike, each one of those is actually relatively unique. All right, so best everything there. It will be kind of interesting to see how we get through that. You remember, Martin, last year when we had, and which is weird in a way because it's the second year in a row that Motegi has been postponed. Last year, strangely,
of course, yeah.
Strangely enough, was for another seismic event or another geological event, that being, and you probably forget how to pronounce this, Martin, so I'll let you think.
We've actually, in the UK, we've started to call it by its English translation. Which is Bernard.
Ah.
Bernard the volcano. No, I just made that up. Bernard the volcano. Yes. It was, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah. Yes.
Crazy. And a ring of fire that was basically on the opposite side of, nearly on the opposite side of the world. You know what I want to do, Martin? Let's go ahead and run the interview with Dennis, because it might dovetail a little bit into what we're about to talk about after that. Folks, this is a taste of what we could have if we could have Dennis on once again. Highly encourage you to give him a poke and see if he'll come back on the show. I believe he will. He will be back. Well, as you'll hear, he'll be back from probably currently in Qatar to soak up a bit of the atmosphere prior to the racing coming up this weekend. I want you guys to enjoy this as much as I did. When we look at the Repsol squad this year, you know, one has a feeling, or at least I do, that they are certainly looking to capture the final 800cc title.
Well, you know, if they don't, this is a chapter in Honda history that's going to be really shameful for them, because, you know, they really devised these regulations. They have always been the driving force behind racing in Japan, even though Yamaha, Suzuki, Kawasaki participate, take part in, you know, in the MSMA decisions, Honda's always been the driving force. They were the ones who had the vision in the beginning that the top class would not be 1,000 cc's, but would be 800 or even smaller. But they had the problem initially that they didn't have enough bikes to fill the grid. When they made the move in 2002, you know, to go over to Moto Grand Prix four strokes, if they'd run the 500 two strokes against the bikes that would have been the more or less fair equivalent, which would have been somewhere around 800 to 830, the two strokes would have probably won. And that wasn't what they were trying to do. So sure. The idea was to go 1,000 cc's until they'd gotten rid of the 500s, then go 800. And following that, he'd go even smaller. Now that's not happening. Quite the opposite. It's going in the back to 1,000 cc's again.
Do you feel that's driven more by the want to have something that they can draw from an existing quiver of engines, or by, you know, riders' requests? It seems like some riders have kind of wanted to go back to the thousands.
I think it's got a lot to do with, you know, when you went from 1,000 cc to 800 cc's, producing, and you end up actually making as much horsepower, almost as much horsepower with the 800s, those are really expensive horses. I mean, you know, the old American saying, you can't beat cubes. The cheapest horsepower is the horsepower that comes from displacement. And when the factories were, you know, in high cotton, when there were more prosperous times, R&D had the money to spend. No one anticipated the crisis that the world economy is in, and particularly now in light of what's happening in Japan, as we speak, there's going to be even less happy money to go around to be spent on R&D. And so going to 1,000cc bikes based on engines, in some cases, that already exist for production bikes is going to be cheaper.
What do you anticipate, and this is kind of a point of contention right now, might be coming in down the road because of the switch to thousands with engines potentially based on production bikes and the fact that Infront is looking askew at MotoGP as they always have. You see any conflicts that are going to rise up even beyond what we have now, which is kind of bubbling under the wind?
I see the conflict, but I don't know how it's going to be resolved. I've talked to Paolo and Maurizio Flamini. I've talked to Carmelo Ezpeleta. I've talked to Vito Ippolito, the president of the FIM. And they're very different versions of what the contractual agreements are. If you talk to the Flamini brothers, they will tell you that they have exclusive rights to the use of production-based engines. If you talk to Carmelo Ezpeleta, he'll say, I don't know what they've got, but my contract doesn't have any limitations. I can use whatever engine I want to. And when you talk to Ippolito, and this is the guy that really counts in all this, the Venezuelan president of the FIM, he says that what constitutes a production machine, doesn't have anything to do, doesn't have specifically to do with the engine that you can take. And that Grand Prix racing, and of course, one thing about Ippolito, unlike other FIM presidents that we've had in the past, like Jos Vassen or Nicolas Rodríguez-Valle or Schmidt, Ippolito actually knows about racing. He was manager of the Benimoto racing team when Johnny Cecotto was racing, and also he was director of that racing team when Carlos Lovato won a world championship for Yamaha. And he says very clearly, hey, from the beginning, many engines in Grand Prix racing came right out of production bikes, whether it was the Manx Norton or whether it was the first bike ever to win a race with a two-stroke engine. The Suzuki's used and Kawasaki's used engines that were based on their road bikes. So I think it's a tough thing for Flamini to defend. What he has in his favor is the precedent that was set when the WCM, the
right.
What was not allowed to race, and that was when it was using an R1 engine.
Right.
That bike was not allowed to compete, but the reason that bike was not allowed to compete is different from the one that that Flamini wants to use as a precedent. In actual fact, Yamaha themselves didn't want that bike on the grid, and within the MSMA, they blackballed it because they didn't want a production Yamaha out there racing in a prototype class.
The crazy thing, though, about that engine was that it was an R1 case that had been highly modified, and the internals were almost all unique or modified versions of an R1 engine. It was pretty damn far from stock.
Absolutely, and it got farther and farther from stock until finally they changed so many things on it. It was four valve when the Yamaha was five valve.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the gearbox, they changed the clutch. They didn't change the, I can't remember, born stroke. They went through such a series of changes, they finally got the thing approved. But if that bike came out today under the new regulations, there'd be no question about it because the MSMA no longer have the authority this is an interesting point because the MSMA had the exclusive right to write the technical regulations.
Right.
They wrote the regulations for the 800. The 800 class has been a disappointment, and it's also increased expenses. And Dorna have really taken those rights back. In the next contract with the MSMA, the MSMA sit at the table. They're allowed to speak. They're allowed to give their opinion. Their opinion counts. But they no longer have the power to go back by a simple majority among MSMA members, change regulations.
I think those of us that have been watching Grand Prix racing for a long time, my personal opinion is it's about time that happened, that they kind of be taken a little bit further down from the process.
This is really, you're going to the argument that people are having still today in the AMA. because the power of the factories has been reduced by the new AMA Pro Racing, the MG. And as a result, one of the manufacturers, American Honda, has withdrawn from racing. And, you know, racing without Honda just doesn't seem like racing. It may be a personal thing between, you know, between Ray Blank and the DMG. I don't know. But can you race without factories? You know, probably not. But Bernie Ecclestone in Formula One, and I had the opportunity to work for Ecclestone for a couple of years when he was a major player in Moto Grand Prix in the beginning. He had the rights before Dorna had them. And I worked for them in press for a while. And it was interesting being around Bernie because he doesn't make a lot of small talk. Everything he says is kind of like written in stone. And one day, holding forth on the subject of Grand Prix racing, he said, "You can never have a successful championship if you let the Japanese manufacturers write the regulations because they don't know anything about motorsport. What they know about is winning. And that's mm-hmm. why you want them in the championship, because they fight the battles as if it were a war. But if they're involved in rulemaking, they're going to be their default setting is to look for personal advantage." And he also said, if you don't let Honda spend their money, they're not going to be happy. You know, that the big manufacturers want the regulations to be written in such a way that money gives you an advantage. Of course, it always does. But the closer you come to a production-based rule, you know, it gets to the point where you can spend a lot of money, but maybe you can't actually buy a lot of advantage with it.
I can't let you speak of working with Bernie Ecclestone without having to ask, has he lost his mind? They're going to actually have artificial rain at F1 races?
Bernie, this is what I'm talking about. Bernie says these things to wind people up, you know? I mean, if Bernie could, he could do the Colbert Report. I mean, he comes up with these one-liners and headlines go all over the world. Bernie wants to wet down the racetrack. I remember once he was talking about production bikes. And he told Flamini, he said, "What you need to do is put lights, headlights, and turn signals on these things, you know? And you can even make rules that people have to put on their turn signals when they overtake. that way people will understand that they're production bikes and not prototypes."
Oh, you got to love it. Got to love it. All right, Dennis, listen, I could talk to you forever, much, much longer, but I know that you've got a time schedule to keep. And so I will say very much so thank you for joining us.
Okay, we'll try and get back together again. I'm ready to take off for Qatar next week and then back and forth a little bit. But, you know, when we're back in the same time zone again and I got a little more time, and we've got a little bit more to talk about, because there's going to be a race and nothing like having a race to give yourself something to talk about. We're wearing ourselves out talking about preseason testing. So we'll catch up with you later.
All right, great. Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, again, thanks to Dennis Noyes. I do feel pretty awful about missing all of that early stuff, and I will catch you guys up after we talk about what we're going to talk about next, which are the testing at Qatar, and try and fill that in a bit. But I certainly couldn't do as well as Dennis and I did during that. So I want you back, Dennis. Martin, take it away. Let's talk about Qatar testing. The final test of the year, too.
Indeed, the final and fourth test of the year, which is mildly depressing for the riders, I'd imagine. I mean, yet again, HRC have clearly got something pretty effective going. If we think back to the beginning of last year, with the straight line stability problems they had, they seem to have been ironed out. I mean, Casey was the quickest over the 2 days, and we got a combined timetable here with Casey at the top, followed by Danny, then Ben Spies, then Marco Simoncelli, Andrea Dovizioso. So you've got the four factory/semi-factory Honda HRCs in the top five. Hiroshi Ayama, who's really coming good, in sixth. Randy DiPugno in seventh on the Ducati.
Which was a bit of a shocker if you think about it, because he was way down the charts and then popped up at the very end.
Yeah, absolutely. Jorge Lorenzo, world champion, in eighth. and a second off Casey's fastest time. Colin Edwards on the second, on the first Tech 3 Yamaha in 9th, Nicky Hayden 10th, Hector Barbera in 11th, Alvaro Bautista is 12th, Valentino Rossi 13th, and 1.3 off Casey's fastest time, Loris 14th, of course also on Pramac Ducati, Carol Abraham 15th, Cal Crutchlow 16th, and Tony Elias 17th. And Tony Elias, half a second behind Cal Crutchlow, 2.5 seconds from Casey. However, as David Emmett, friend of the show at motomatters.com, has been at pains to point out, that sort of table can be quite misleading, particularly when you look at the fact that that is the single fastest lap. You know, no one does a table with average lap speed, because that's a bit, you know, if a rider has just takes a break for a lap or has a near run off and goes, okay, I'll pootle back to the pit. You know, that could be really, really misleading. So one thing he did look at, and this is just from day one, who did the most laps under 1:57, 1:57. And on day one, Danny Pedrosa, who was first in the timetables, only did two laps in the 1:56s. Casey did 12. Ayama did 3, Ben Spies did 1, Lorenzo did 13, Colin Edwards did 2, and Dovi did 4. That was the top 7 in overall time. That kind of tells you that's what you really need to be looking at, I believe, and this was David's point, for someone who could put a race pace together. How consistently could somebody hit those fast, fast laps? So the gap between, well, Casey's probably the exception, but the gap between top and bottom, it may well not be as great as those single fastest laps imply.
There's no doubt that clearly, because this is the final test, and it is much like the PI test was before Phillip Island, and much of which of that actually came to pan out, with the exception of a couple of incidents that dropped some of the top guys out. If you were to look at the times from Phillip Island, you could actually make a relatively decent prediction about what the results would be, with the exception perhaps of one Marco Melandri being a challenger for both those races, and the obvious drop off of Sebastian Guintoli due to going off track. However, if you just looked at the base times, much as you say from fast laps, I also agree. I don't believe it tells a tale, and I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised. And the one person that is down in 13th, I would not at all be surprised if he was in the top 5, and I would not put him out of contention possibly to be on the podium. I did note, and Martin, I'm not sure how many of the videos that you've had a chance to watch from the testing, there weren't a whole lot, but the ones that were there were great, and many thanks to MotoGP.com for those. That, and you got to wonder if a little bit of it was stage acted, but I remember one shot they had from day two, one from inside of Rossi's garage. He was sort of whinging about his shoulder, whether or not he knew the camera on him was on him, and I'm sure he always does. there's this one thing that if you haven't been watching or haven't been following MotoGP for too long, or haven't kind of figured this out, when they do these sort of summary videos, they have a very specific pattern they follow, and they will start with a few laps or, you know, a couple of corners of the rider in first place, second place, and so on down through the grid, if you will. They did it the same way this time, and it certainly took a long time to get down to some people that you were rather surprised about. But the one that really stuck out to me, and I actually had to go back and reread a couple of things because I was very surprised and very glad for him, because and impressed on top of that as well, was the sudden ascendance of Mr. Randa Dipugne, who had been languishing at the bottom of the charts for 2 days, and certainly was not looking so good. The one person, Martin, the one person and a team behind him, and somebody we've had on the show over the past, Lucio, that's got to be hurt is Tony Elias. And yeah, that same Nakamoto interview that you mentioned when he was talking about the situation back in Japan, he did mention that they had tried a different chassis for Tony. They do say that he has a very unique riding style, and I don't think anybody can disagree with that. Can you?
No, and this has been said before. I mean, when one of the things that they was attributed to his decline in MotoGP leading to his dropping to Moto2 for last season was the control tires. They said, you know, Tony used to have a very specific, tire almost made for him, which suited his style. And of course the Bridgestones came in as the single manufacturer and it just didn't, he couldn't make it work. So I wonder if he still is finding he has that problem. And of course, you know, it's although he's come back to Honda, it's probably a fairly different beast to the one he rode 2 years ago.
Yep. Speaking of a couple of different things, this was Rossi's weekend to have his first off. Apparently, was relatively gentle. Once again, speaking of De Puignet, he was off at least twice. There were a couple of other guys that had some small crashes. Nobody with anything major, with the potential exception, if you include your smallest digits or your pinky, as we call them here in the United States, was one Cal Crutchlow at the end of day two. Did his hand was trapped under the handlebar. He apparently grounded along for an extended period of time, did some major damage to first the glove and then to the finger. He's said that it's going to be obviously extremely uncomfortable to be riding with this weekend. And he was disappointed because he was kind of ready to jump into the top 10 up to that point. But we shall see. But yeah, the glove was not pretty.
Sorry, I was just going to say, no. Yeah, no, finish off on Cal.
Very cool. And I really appreciate it when David goes and he kind of digs that stuff up. We'd been talking about that, but it was nice of him to put it in full on numerical values. I highly encourage those of you with or without, but I would encourage you to get one, a subscription to MotoGP.com. They do put up tons and tons of data that you can, even in preseason tests, for the most part, you can go ahead and pull down these PDF files that have lap by lap data. You can dive in there. And I'm pretty sure that most of you out there are interested enough to actually start paying attention to, you know, lap by lap, sector by sector, frankly. You don't have to geek out that far, but if you're really interested in what makes these races come out the way they do, as well as practices and tests like this, there is a ton of numbers to just go and look at, and you can learn an awful lot. Take the time to go and look. It's actually fun. And if you wouldn't be listening to this if you didn't think this stuff was fun.
So, and you know, I mean, David Emmett is fantastic at sifting through and pulling out the pertinent bits to the point that he gets retweeted by an awful lot of the professional commentators. I mean, Azzi Farni and Matt Roberts are frequently, and Gavin Emmett are frequently retweeting David's point stuff. And then you go to follow the link to his website and you see things like the, okay, so this is the fastest lap chart, but let's see who could do consistent fast laps, you know, and it really, it's very analytical, but he got that. He has that knack of putting it into terms that even someone who may not have that analytical of mind can quickly grasp.
Sure. And on top of that, he's been on the ground. He's there in Qatar and he's there for the test as well as for this coming week. He's been hanging out with Scott Jones, who is the photographer for the calendar that we still have up for grabs. And we'll talk about that in a bit. And then I think he's going to be staying with Andrew Wheeler, which should be a blast for him there.
He's cooking.
I think, come to think of it, I think Scott Jones is going to be staying with Andrew. I don't know. One of the two of them. I was going to try and get those two as well as Jensen Beeler on the phone, but they were so exhausted after spending the full day at the track. Because, you know, when you're doing Qatar, you get up at, you know, 7 or 8 in the morning, and then you go to the track, and they don't get on course until, you know, 7, 8 in the afternoon, and then they go till about 10 o'clock at night, and then you get back to the, so, you know, they're like 15, 16 hour days. Mm. And that's walking around trying to catch up with people. That is a long day. And, I might note, without the assistance of any refreshing beverage that the likes of you and I enjoy.
Yes. Yes.
But
another interesting point that was brought out, I think this was actually, Azifani, was that over the 2 days, every single Ducati crashed.
Yeah.
And they were all front end washouts.
Very true.
Maybe it wasn't Casey last year. And certainly, I mean, going back to the tests and the times, Casey is looking amazing. I mean, as you guys mentioned last week, that this statement that came out from HRC saying, you know, yeah, our guys were struggling to believe, and now Casey's come along and made us believe that we can win. And you think, yeah, Danny's probably not going to be overjoyed at hearing that. But the only thing is, I would say those two might be so keen to beat each other because they both have the capability. If they get a flyer, and let's face it, Danny is the master of the flying start, disappearing over the horizon, they'll be so desperate to stop each other running away that they might just push it a bit hard at times, which is why I'm still nailing my flag to young Jorge to retain his world championship. But then, probably a bit early for predictions.
But that never stopped you.
Nope. Absolutely not.
Oh, there's been some funny emails going around internally and amongst some of the more entertaining devotees of the show, and I've just been laughing.
Well, I noticed Big John Hart's prediction had Casey at the top, so I'm thinking, so our doubler quits on the beer. I'm quite happy for John to switch fire to Casey from Valentino. Although the original bet for the double or quits was who'd finish higher this season. But no, I mean, that nicely segues onto the next bit we were going to talk about, which was this. It was listening to you and Jules, you were talking about the Alan Cathcart article suggesting that there might have been a bit of Machiavellian shenanigans going on between Dorna and Ducati over the World Superbike pullout, and sort of Ducati putting all their eggs into the MotoGP basket. And Jules mentioned, he said, it feels a bit like HRC around the millennium time when they were, you know, not up to stuff, but there was an element of them trying to make the playing field slightly less than level. And which led me to a chain of thought, which was like, yeah, well, I remember, you know, Rossi, what the reason he left HRC is they were all about the engineer, and he said, no, it's the rider. And he wanted to go to a team that appreciated the rider's input. And he looked at Ducati and thought, no, I like the fact they're Italian, they're smaller, independent, but they're just too similar to HRC in as much as the engineer is king in that company. So he went to Yamaha. Now he has gone to Ducati, and there seems to be an element of lack of progress. And I'm wondering, are they listening to Rossi and Burgess, which history suggests that they really should do? Or is it, have they all quietly agreed, look, this year, let's not worry too much. We'll put together the best we can, but our main effort is 2012 and 1,000 cc's. But the one thing I have got to say, and this is not me ragging on Rossi, who I absolutely accept is one of the top three motorcycle riders of all time that I've ever seen or heard of.
Uh-huh.
But people are still suggesting that this is Rossi sandbagging. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, there was a comment on Facebook who was saying, oh, the sands will start to trickle out of the trousers soon. I'm like, what? I mean, Colin Edwards said that was nonsense, and that's good enough for me because Colin knows him better than most. You know, I've never set up a bike to race. You have, Jim, and I would imagine, knowing you're going to be racing at 100%, to set it up to race at 100%, you need to test at 100% or as near as damn it. So, or else you're introducing far too many variables. You know, you're not going to have tyres at the same temperature. You're not going to put the same stresses on the suspension, etc. So how on earth, with such limited testing, can even Rossi, who is a magician, you know, does incredible things with a bike at times, how can he, you know, be riding at 75-80% just to sort of con everyone into thinking that? I mean, goodness sake, And he doesn't generally do. When he goes to test, he generally goes out there and tests hard.
I think, Martin, I think all of my friends go insane about this time of year. And I think, honestly, I genuinely enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if I can clear a few things up here, or at least give you some clarity and some what my kind of base thoughts are. A, I've set a race bike up. B, I sucked. So in reality, I've got no idea. Well, okay. I've got no direct experience in what these guys do.
Right.
That being said, I've been paying enough attention to it for 20 plus years that I do have an idea how teams go about things. And I certainly have been focusing in on it a lot more in probably the last 10 to 15 years. And to toss out a number that you threw at me, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Nobody can go out there at 70 to 75% and get set up a race bike. You can certainly go out there at 98 to 99% and set up a race bike. The guys that are doing these fast laps are going out there at 101 and 102% and setting these strings of laps. Everything in GP, especially amongst these top elite guys, everybody plays mind games, or if not, they have somebody like Alberto Puig doing the mind games for them. There is no doubt. I would be awful surprised. I don't think we're going to see this weekend a whole bunch of surprises over last year. I think if you had to look at what you were thinking of, what was going to happen near the end of last year, except for you said, okay, but Valentino Rossi is healthy. I think he's going to be fine up there. Some of the people
I quite accept the Rossi Burgess, that they'll sprinkle a bit of magic dust over that bike and over Valentino. He's not going to be in 13th place. I absolutely do not expect to see him down there.
Let me throw this at you. I will bet he'll be near the top five by the end of lap one. And then what?
Well, I suppose a lot of it depends where he qualifies. If he qualifies 13th,
I still
no. He'd probably still be yeah. He'll probably still be. And Valentino's crash, it rather looks like he just touched a white line at that point of the Qatar evening where the dew comes down, so it was very slightly damp. Rather than he was pushing and pushed over the edge. So, it can be misleading. But I still think that they got so limited time. You know, they can't go off and just do a private test somewhere. You know, that bike and that rider cannot be united other than that official testing.
So, I know, but they can't, but others can.
Yeah, but can someone else set up his bike for him?
Well, let me see. The manager of the team is the former and current test rider and has the most intimate contact with the team and the rider, one Vittorio Gresci.
Yeah.
No, probably not.
Exactly. I mean, he's obviously watched Valentino from afar for years, but this is the first time they worked together.
I love throwing these kind of wrenches in the work. I'm putting doubt in the minds of those that think everything is so certain.
Yeah. And of course it isn't. I mean, for all I know, Danny and Casey will take each other off at turn one. Jorge will have an absolute nightmare. You know, Ben will find a reverse gear and Valentino will come charging through and take the win, in which case, everybody, please feel free to laugh at me on Twitter and the Facebook page for MotoPod and indeed by email.
I'm pretty sure this is actually going to be Pramac's first win with Randy on the top of the box.
Yeah, crossing the line sideways.
he did toss it down twice. You know what? This first race is a crapshoot, which is, you know. Okay, so dropping back to the MCN Fantasy League, I was very certain not to spend a ton of money on MotoGP. Granted, we've got three races in this first bit.
We haven't now. We've only got two.
There are two. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So those of us who did do that, me, with Casey and Lorenzo, with Jorge and Casey as MotoGP riders, I'm now starting to think, dope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you never know. You never know. And to be perfectly honest, we never know. We've got you guys will have the opportunity to listen to this before a bike even sits, tire or wheel or bodywork on course. And I think this weekend is the first race of the year is always fun because we always go in having, you know, some sort of idea. I mean, let me pull you back to Qatar last year, Martin.
Yeah.
There was a certain light blue bike that was in the front three for a good significant portion of that race with a rider that is now not on a blue bike. And that would have been – or 2 years ago, I'm sorry.
Loris.
Yeah. And he looked like he could challenge for a victory, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, in Chile. Didn't he run wide?
He ran way wide.
Ran wide and rejoined, yeah.
No, he took a significant tumble through the kitty litter.
Oh, no, that's right. It was last year. He ran wide and rejoined, wasn't it? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's you never know. This is a race that you never know until the checkers fall. And as an idea of what if kind of things that we have to expect, we know this is going to be a 4-day race weekend. They've kind of changed things around. The qualifying is a little bit different. There's a significant gap between the time they qualify and the warm-up lap. And then it's different again for Moto 2. You know, we haven't even discussed Moto 2 and 125s, and frankly, let's save that for next week, Martin, because we would super over-speculate on that. Just as a point of note, they just finished up a Jerez test, and there were some interesting results out of that. Look for those results on MotoGP.com or in the various news outlets.
And just to round up with the sort of pre-race one of the season, don't forget, people, it's a 4-day event. Mm-hmm. So the FP1 is Thursday. One of the things, and we've been laughing about, best season ever. But you look at that, you think potential race winners, Stoner, Pedrosa, Lorenzo, Rossi, obviously, Spies, Simoncelli, Vizioso, possibly Ayama, possibly Nicky Hayden. You know, you've got a lot of people who can get in there and mix up the points. So potentially, before we've turned a wheel in anger, best season ever.
Yep. Well, isn't it always?
Yeah. Yeah. Before you start, it is, yeah.
You know, the bonuses, those were actually coming into the first race of the year with most everybody on the far end of their healing cycle, as far as we know. So that's a little unusual. You know, we don't have Danny broken into bits. We don't have guys going in with motocross injuries. There's a lot of guys that are at the end of their healing, no doubt. And shoulders have been the theme of this off season. But, if people can keep on that and, you know, if the thing that always spoils the fun, Martin, is injuries. And I would love to see a season straight through with people staying healthy.
Yeah, I mean, Wilco Zeelenberg pointed out the Yamaha team manager, Jorge's team manager, that he said beginning of last year he had his broken thumb, he was recovering from the motocross accident, and so there was no pressure on him, and he got off to a complete flyer. This year, he said, due to Honda's testing results, he's not favourite, so there's no pressure on him, but he's healthy this year. A lot of the guys who started a bit croc last year starting healthy this year. The one who nearly always starts healthy, of course, Valentino, isn't. So, yeah. But interesting, he did say that it was only about an hour and a half before the end of day two session that his shoulder started to give up, so he couldn't push as much as he'd liked. Well, that still gives him comfortable. I mean, it's been really intensive, 2 5-hour days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, they're not riding for all of those 5 hours, but, you know, I think from what he's been saying, reading between the lines, it should be good for race distance.
It should. And obviously, during a non-simulated race, he's going to push through and beyond any kind of pain he has. All right. We could beat and batter this to death, but frankly, Our preseason for MotoGP is at a close, and next time you hear from us is going to be with race results, ideas, thoughts, and probably finger waggings going, I told you so, at least from one or the both of us. Yeah, I know. Very cool. We did have a bit of news on the World Superbike, World Supersport front. Donington Park has got the final approval from FIM, double woohoo there, and they're good to go for the next round of World Superbike on the 25th through 27th of March. A warning from Martin for you international viewers, or at least international viewers in the UK, not the Europe. clocks do go forward for 1 hour at 0100 in the early hours of Sunday, the 27th. Here in the United States, we went forward just this last weekend, and I'm still trying to adjust to it. But I'm getting caught up. You know, I was mentioning to a friend over the weekend, I'm like, can you imagine if they did this on a Monday morning, how many people would show up late for work? I think they should do it like on Saturday morning, you know, give us another day to kind of get used to it. Excuse me. Fine. Hold on. Where's my beer? That might be the closer. All right. Let's see if I can get through this without coughing. All right. And finally, this is kind of a, just to fill you in. Again, from the Dennis Noyes interviews, we had a interview. We had a whole bunch of talk about this, and unfortunately that is gone to the electronic winds. However, I did want to mention it. There was an AMA race this weekend in Daytona Beach, Florida. The classic one, if you will, in the AMA calendar, that being the Daytona 200, of course, filled with support races. The Daytona 200 is now a 600 super sport race running on the high banks at, shall we say, elevated speeds. They do about 170, 175 plus up there. Yes, I know. And some very, very serious drafting. Those of you here in the States saw it, at least the parts that were running in a concurrent fashion, were probably, as usual, amazed. Daytona goes back years and years, both for domestic and international racers. Barry Sheen was classically injured on the high banks here. That being said, it was a brutal weekend from a organizational standpoint and from a couple of other logistical things that occurred. The 200 is a 200-mile race with pit stops, kind of unique in that point. It's a semi-endurance race. It has very unique demands upon the bikes, but also upon the tires. And tires have long and consistently been a point of contention there, and this weekend was no different. They got the race off about 17 laps in. Multiple riders started having problems with their front tires. And this was specifically a chunking issue. This is where chunks of your tires start to fall out, large ones, and grip rapidly becomes an issue. And at high speeds, leaned over on the banking with a solid wall to your upper right, falls are bad. I don't think I can put it any more succinctly than that. So what did happen, especially after at least one fall and a couple of riders coming in and showing some seriously bad problems, not a wear problem, mind you, a tire, I don't want to say disintegration, but a serious tire malfunction. Dunlop, who is the spec tire supplier to the Daytona Superbike Series, got with the organizers and requested a red flag. That red flag was enacted, and they brought every bike in, did a mandatory tire change, and this took a long period of time because these tires were not in the regular lineup. They were a backup tire that they had. They went ahead and shod every bike, got them up to pressure, up to temperature, allowed the teams to make adjustments for them. One team who had, because they had called us and it was actually a red flag, when the red flag was brought out, this particular team had blown a motor, was already rolling in, was a gentleman named Jason DeSalvo running with Lattice Racing. He had blown a motor just prior to the red flag, was able to pull around behind pit wall and during the red flag, is a long red flag. Remember, 2 hours. The team was actually able to repair the bike. You cannot change out the chassis, but you can repair the bike, meaning you can repair a blown engine, meaning you can put a new engine in, which they did. They refired the race after 2 hours, and it had already gone off live TV. We were only able to watch live timing and scoring, and only then for a very short period of time before that went out. And it was.
Is this the thing that they had to go to truck racing in Nevada or something?
It was not even truck racing. It was truck racing qualifying. don't get me started, and we'll get floods of email from people about Speed TV. I still have to give them a few props. As Dennis and I talked about, Speed does have contracts. NASCAR does pay the bills. They're a very big. You all right?
Yeah, sorry, I just banged my headset.
NASCAR does pay the bills. They're a big, deep pocket organization that a lot of people here in the States prescribe to. So be it. Now they did go off the air, but they came on back on at 11 o'clock, showed the entirety of the rest of the race as well as both superbike races, and that was cool. It was a 3 hour show, albeit late at night. We were bummed, but a 15 lap sprint. And in the end, it got even more chaotic as, Jason DeSalvo, who replaced the engine in his Ducati 848, ended up winning the race. But right behind them, a few guys came together at 170 miles an hour. And we had a big old tumble of front brake labor, caught endo, a few bikes getting together. And what could have been an extremely ugly mess ended up with both gentlemen walking away from it. And it looked like a serious yard sale. The worst injury was a broken thumb. I'm sure plenty of bumps and bruises, but a whole bunch of controversy after that. And I won't go into it. Those of you interested can follow on that. That is my horrible Daytona review. If you'd heard Dennis and I going on talking about it, it would have been great. But I wanted to get it in there.
Accompanied by creaks and clunks from this end. Sorry about that.
That was a whole bunch of talking. And you know what? That's kind of a preview and a warm-up for me to get ready for this year. What else do we have? Let's outro us here, Martin, and get us off here, and we will get ready for a great race weekend.
Yeah. Well, it is that time of year, folks. Motorpod is ramping up. We are spreading our slight influence further. We're bringing more people in, and unfortunately that does involve more costs, particularly when, primarily Jim, but Jules as well, and hopefully once I sort out my recording stuff, me, are interviewing people, we do have call costs and the like, so we are on the beg. It is donation time. You can donate through the Facebook page or through motopodcast.com. our website, and those donations is basically what keeps us going and keeps us free, which is something we have absolutely every intention of remaining. So if anybody, and don't think, well, I'll wait till I've, got a decent amount, $1, $5, anything that anyone can chuck into the pot is absolutely welcome. And I don't incur the cost personally, but Jim and Jules carry the can on that, and it ain't cheap.
You will once I can finally get you to start doing interviews yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
You've only done on-site interviews so far, and
yeah,
and as well as Gonzalo Silva. He's going to be helping us out, once the season starts to ramp up, especially. As Martin says, as we spread our wings and we're actually kind of getting out there a little bit more and trying to get a little bit more planning going, we will have the opportunity to talk to more folks. Talking to more folks means you actually hear from us a little bit less, which I know can occasionally be tedious, perhaps like this episode. if you can help us out, that'd be great. Through the Facebook fan page, there's a donate tab or a donate link, and also through the donate link at motopod.com. or motopodcast.com. Oof, that's hard to say. I need to get that. I got to get that domain. On top of that, we did have a sparsely entered contest, and I'm going to blame this on you, Mr. Jules Tisek, for I implored Jules on the prior episode. I said, Jules, can you make the calendar link a little bit shorter? And Jules, just to mess with me, but I have a feeling you completely messed with you listeners out there that might want to get the finalmotomatters.com calendar, which will be signed by myself, and including some Motopod stickers. And by the way, I did have two calendars bounce from the first batch that I sent out a couple of weeks ago. I need to get those resent out, folks. So if you have not received your calendar from prior to that, hold on. I will get that to you. Jules used a horrific email address to send in for the contest last week. As a result, I believe we got two entries, and only one of which was actually sent to the correct address. So in the show notes, I will include Jules' fantastically obfuscated email address. And if you would like to make a comment about that, feel free to do that to Jules. Otherwise, if you'd like to send in your answer to the question, which I will repeat shortly, you can send it in to motopod@motopodcast.com, the easy way.
Yeah.
What is the question? The question is, and you do not need to be on Facebook to guess this, what are the top 10 in order countries that subscribe to us or that are fans of the Motopod podcast on the Facebook fan page? We've got about 5,300 people that are in there now. The top 10 countries, those that come closest in order, will get the final calendar with all the goodies enclosed. Very simple, kind of. That is it. You can send your entry into motopod@motopodcast.com. The top 10 countries in order.
Or they can send it into small C's.
No, don't go there.
somewhere in Southern California, Jules is smiling.
I hope he's in Southern California.
He's not in Southern California. He's in San Francisco, or close to.
Yeah. I was in LA last week on a business trip, and that didn't work out too well. But I saw. I almost got to meet up with some Motopod folks, and in fact, it sounds like I'll have to be down there at the end of next week. So keep your ears peeled, or your Facebook ears peeled, or whatever. Maybe I'll mention, and I can get together with people after work and sit around and chat, talk about the guitar race. That's it. Let's put the brakes on this thing, Martin.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Okay, great show. Thanks.
Yeah, that was it. That was my response.
All right. Once again, thanks for downloading the show. Appreciate it. Many thanks to Dennis Noyes for joining us in our first completely chaotic and catastrophic show of the year. We get this way when there is racing directly upon us. Martin, welcome back. Great to have you back.
Great to be back.
Awesome. And next time you have to get Sharon up at 6 o'clock in the morning to join us for this bit.
Absolutely.
I do want to give many thanks to Jules for the fantastic editing he's been doing over the past few episodes. Those of you out in Motopod land have probably been noticing the sound quality has been skyrocketing. If you'd like to make a comment, feel free to send that in. Give Jules a pat on the back. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week after the first GP race. How cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, rock and roll.
Brilliant.